Oracle, personal. Entry number 310. No Man's Land. Day 104. 433 Zulu. Dear Dad, I woke up yesterday morning thinking I was late for school. I was hearing your voice. And I sat up in the darkness of my apartment in the bitter cold. And for a second, I honestly thought I was 13 once more. Then I remembered where I was, and I started to lie back down.
Attention! Attention!
It was just before dawn, the light beginning to streak in across the ceiling, past the ice that's been forming on the inside of my windows every night. I reached for my glasses, fumbled myself to the side of the bed, and hoisted my drowsy keister into the chair. The only reason I was sure I was awake was that I was so damn cold, I knew I couldn't still be under my blankets. I rolled to the window and had to open it to look out. And then, it was really clear. Your voice, coming through some megaphone from down below, maybe a block away at the most.
Street demons, slow boys. You're in our territory now. Surrender!
Across the street, I saw doors and windows opening, people pulling back their barricades and risking glances outside, listening. At the end of the block, I watched a group of street demons break around the corner, running like the whole department was after them with hats and bats. Then you guys appeared, and for a second, that's almost exactly what it did look like. At least, if your department had switched to baseball bats and makeshift clubs instead of riot batons and 38 specials.
Attention! We are the police! We're here to maintain the order. Help us rid your streets of these gangsters. Now's the time to rise up. Now's the time to take back what's yours.
It was like magic, Dad. Like magic. Later, when you made it up to my place, I thought you'd never stop hugging me.
There aren't many women who can say that a war was fought on their behalf.
I thought maybe you were joking at first. But the look in your eyes said that you weren't. And you almost made me cry. Sarah was standing right behind you, and she was smiling. And when you moved, she gave me a hug and a kiss on the cheek.
Care to step outside?
What, are you kidding me? I haven't been out of this damn apartment since the earthquake. If you're willing to carry me down 18 floors, I'm willing to go outside.
Your father will carry you. I'll take the chair.
When we got out front and I was back in the wheelchair, you handed me a can of blue spray paint and pointed at the demon's tag on the side of the clock tower.
Would you like to do the honors?
You have no idea how big a kick I got out of spraying that big blue GCPD on the side of my own home. And the people watching, all my neighbors who had been living under siege just like myself for the last 3 months, they loved it too. I thought they were going to put you and Sarah on their shoulders and march you through the streets. They were so happy. Then Bullet came over.
The neighborhood's been secured. For now, we've got the demons and lowboys in a temporary holding area on the next block. It's getting pretty antsy, though.
I'll come over. I'll be right back, Barbara.
You gave my hand a squeeze and off you went, Sarah with you. I sat there for a minute, just grinning at the street, breathing the fresh winter air. It hurt my lungs. It was that cold, but God, it felt good. I'd been cooped up for so long, I couldn't get enough of it. The sidewalk was cracked in places, but pretty clear, and I started rolling along, and it wasn't really that I meant to follow you, but in the end, I have to admit that's what I was doing. I came around the corner and I heard Foley talking to Bullock.
It's insane, risking all of our lives for the sake of his daughter, Harvey. He got damn lucky.
Luck? Hell. It was strategy. It was tactics.
It was pure recklessness. Sanctioning murder? He should be ashamed to call himself a police.
He doesn't call himself a police, Foley. He calls himself commissioner.
Maybe that's the... Barbara, I'm sorry.
I wish I could say that the way he went pale, or the way he slunk off, made me feel better. I wish I could, but I can't. I thought that was the low point of the day, the counter to the delight in seeing you and Sarah. I was wrong. Around midnight, one of my agents called in, Alex. He's been pretty reliable for me, and he's another of my sneaks, in that he's good at sticking to the shadows and getting in close to where the action is. I've no reason to doubt the veracity of his reports. When you and Sarah left today, I knew you were trying to figure out what to do with the demons and lowboys that had been taken prisoner. Jailing them was obviously out of the question. The jail itself is in ruins, and it's not like you can spare anyone to guard these guys 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And that doesn't even touch on the resource drain it would be. Alex reported that you and Pettit had been arguing about how to proceed for most of the evening, and that you finally made a decision a little after dark. You and Pettit went over to the holding area. Alex says that you used that megaphone of yours again.
All lowboys and demons have 1 hour to clear the territory. If any of you are found here after that, the penalty is death.
Then Pettit drew his weapon, put it to the head of the nearest lowboy, and splattered his brains all over the street. Just to prove that you guys were serious. I know he did it without your permission, Dad. I know that. I know you would never have sanctioned a murder in cold blood. You're a cop, after all. You're the best cop. You're my hero, Dad. Tell me he did it without your permission. My radio woke me 8 minutes ago, from the one frequency I've kept clear for the last 104 days. The frequency I've been praying would go active. I had been dreaming about what I was like when I had my legs, or at least when my legs would listen to my brain. I had been dreaming of the nights when I could almost fly, when I felt beautiful and powerful and did good. Dreaming myself as I had been, as Batgirl. In my dream, Gotham had been whole and vibrant, the lights of the city bright. I moved from rooftop to air to rooftop again, and I was happy and certain, and feeling so very much alive.
Oracle.
It was him, on the radio.
I'm back. Just thought you'd like to know.
It was you, then. Putting the tags up in Dooley Square.
Tags?
Bat tags, yellow paint. Your symbol.
I haven't been to Dooley Square.
Then who was it?
But there was no response, and I realized he'd cut the connection. I'm looking at the dawn of NML Day 104. And I'm beginning to think that things aren't getting better. I'm beginning to think they're about to get worse. A lot worse.
James Gordon was working in the garden, trying to get frozen earth out of a terracotta flower pot. His fingers hurt and his back, and Sarah had already told him to come inside and go to bed, that it was past midnight, but he knew there was no point to it. If he went to bed, he'd stay awake, replaying the moment in his head. If he went to bed, he'd close his eyes. And if he closed his eyes, he'd see it all again. The lowboy's look of surprise that turned to horror in the instant before Pettit pulled the trigger. The look in his eyes. The moment after the bullet had burst through brain and bone, and the lowboy had realized he was dead. Gordon was clenching his jaw without meaning to, and he had to force himself to relax. Not a low boy, just a boy. Not older than 20 at the most. Some scared 20-year-old kid who tried to survive the no man's land by being tough, finding safety in numbers, and doing what the rest did. How was that any damn different from what he and the rest of the GCPD were doing right now?
Damn it.
He set the pot down, realizing the attempt was futile. The earth was staying put, despite his best intentions. He looked up at the clear sky, the starlight so much brighter in the cold air.
Gotta be after one now, at least.
He heard something from the far side of the garden. More rats running along the edge, looking for food. He and Sarah had found a couple inside in the last few weeks, searching for scraps in the empty kitchen. Gordon doubted that they'd had any luck. It was Pettit. That was the damn problem. Simply giving the declaration, telling them to stay out, warning them if they ever came back they'd be killed, Pettit had insisted that wasn't enough.
They have to know you mean it, Commissioner.
I do.
Gordon hadn't been lying, but Pettit had killed the boy anyway.
Why did you do that?
Now, they believe us. Now they'll run all over the city telling everyone they meet that the Blue Boys aren't to be messed with. They'll say we've lost it, and that anyone who crosses us is looking for a world of hurt. Now they'll leave us alone.
Pettit was right, of course. The words wouldn't have been enough. It was the action that sold them. But it didn't make Jim Gordon feel any better. Gordon realized that he wasn't alone in the garden any longer. He rose slowly, taking his time to ease his right hand to his hip, and started to turn for the door back to the house. He could pinpoint the sound now. He pivoted, drawing, and as he did so, he thought that perhaps it might be Batman and not some lowboy out for revenge, in which case Gordon wouldn't shoot, but he sure as hell would give the vigilante a piece of his mind.
Working the graveyard shift, Commissioner?
The voice came from the corner away from the house, deep in the shadow beneath a leafless plum tree. Gordon couldn't make out the shape of the speaker, but he knew the voice. He held the pistol in his hand steady.
How did you get in here?
It was simple. Your men are too terrified, too tired, and too few. You've all had a long week, haven't you? All that running around, chasing the demons and the low boys, and then that little execution on the street. Didn't know you had that in you, Jimmy.
Give me a reason I don't drop you where you stand.
I'll give you two. First, you haven't heard what I have to say. Second, you're still the law.
Gordon adjusted his grip, breathing carefully.
Want me to continue?
I'm listening.
We can help each other, Jim.
Forget it. You're psychotic.
Gordon remembered that laugh, and it sent chills down his spine.
One man's psychotic is another man's visionary. Besides which, if we're going to bring up the issue of sanity, what kind of police lets his wife and crippled daughter stay in this godforsaken hellhole? Anyone with half a brain quit while the going was good. All that's left in Gotham are the degenerates, the same people you'd never have thought twice about rousting before the NML. But here you are, Jimmy, with no legal jurisdiction and no powers of the state behind you. Why did you stay?
Someone had to. Law must be maintained. There has to be order.
Exactly. Justice must prevail, even in a lawless land. That's why I'm here. We're two of a kind, Commissioner. Anarchy has forged some strange allies here. Why not us?
Gordon was feeling the ache in his triceps from holding the gun steady for so long.
Because you're a killer.
Really? Well, then the joke's on you, isn't it?
What do you mean?
Don't play coy. I heard about your little stunt with the demons and the lowboys, playing them off against each other while you and yours sat back and watched. It was a good move, tactically brilliant, ruthless. I liked it.
This is war.
I know.
Desperate times call for desperate measures.
Jim, you're preaching to the choir here. You've got nothing to lose by hearing me out.
Gordon looked at the shape in the shadows, saw both hands come up, palms out and empty. The ache in his arms was fierce now, and the pain in his back was getting worse. With a shock, he realized that he was feeling truly old. He put his thumb on the hammer and uncocked the pistol, lowering the weapon to point at the ground.
Talk. I'll listen.
Sarah was asleep when he crawled into bed finally, just before dawn. Gordon tried to settle in without disrupting her, and he'd finally forced his body to relax, letting his head truly sink back into the pillow.
Jim?
When she rolled over to look at him.
I thought I heard voices in the garden. Was someone out there?
No, Seamus. Just me.
Oh, who must have dreamt it?
Must have. Go back to bed.
He knew she had fallen back asleep. Probably had never truly woken at all. In the morning, the odds were she wouldn't remember the conversation ever taking place. Gordon stared at the ceiling. When he closed his eyes, he saw the boy's face. The woman who had made herself into the new Batgirl had never known all that much about Black Mask, but it seemed to her that this time, the criminal had finally gone off the deep end. She knew the man who had once called himself Roman Sionis had started life as a spoiled and rich brat, heir to the Sionis cosmetics fortune, an empire of makeup and perfumes created by Roman's parents. She knew that somewhere along the line, little Roman had become obsessed with masks, both literal and figurative. She was hazy on a lot of the details, but some stuck in memory. The fact that Sionis' face had been horribly burnt in a chemical fire, one that had left his skin shiny and black. The fact that Sionis, upon creating himself as Black Mask, had gathered to him those criminals he could, calling them the False Face Society. that the False Face Society had been some of Gotham's worst and most diehard felons, all of them masked, all of them eager to do violence in the name of their work. For a couple of years, despite Sionis' clearly slipping grip on sanity, he had ruled the Gotham underworld, had even managed to expand operations as far south as Bloodhaven, down the coast. Crazy he might have been all along, but it hadn't gotten in his way. Until now. For the better part of a week now, every night after finishing her other duties and donning the costume, the new Batgirl had headed out from her home and worked her way along the east side, trying to track Black Mask's movements, or if not him precisely, at least the movements of his gang. The street demons and lowboys had been taken down finally by the GCPD, and she felt it was time to expand her purview as well. She had chosen Black Mask as her target for a couple of reasons, not the least of which being he was a named criminal, and she wanted that cachet. She wanted it in spades so everyone in Gotham would know that the Bat still haunted the night, and that criminals had damn well better beware. She didn't know if Batman himself was ever coming back, if indeed he truly was gone rather than just lying low, but she knew the power of the symbol, what the Bat meant to Gotham, and she was going to make certain that nobody forgot. So that was the first reason for her choice. The second was more practical. Black Mask's followers had been appearing more and more frequently in what she considered to be her neck of the woods, and their appearances were consistently unpleasant. The followers were maybe as crazy as Black Mask himself. Self-mutilated men and women who dressed in rags and tatters, fresh scars showing on every inch of their exposed flesh. From what Batgirl had heard, they were collecting people. To what end, she did not know. But those reasons aside, there was one other, just as important and certainly more motivating, at least for her. If and when the Batman came back, she wanted to be able to look him in the eye, to make it perfectly clear that she was, if not his equal, at least worthy of playing on the same team. If she could take down Black Mask, that would do it. If she did that, he'd have no choice but to accept her. She harbored no illusions about how the Batman would respond to her. By donning the mantle of the Bat without his permission, indeed without his knowledge, she had issued a challenge. And she knew enough about him to know he wouldn't like that. His partners in the past, they had been authorized help, trained by him personally. Even with that, she knew for a fact that they were ridden hard, that Batman demanded as much from them as from himself. In his book, there was no room at all for failure. You could do the job or you couldn't. And that was the end of the discussion. So the new Batgirl would show him just how well she could do the job. She'd tracked a group of Black Mask's followers from Puckett Park on the Upper East Side all the way to where the Sprang River separated the north and south parts of the island that was Gotham. There had been six of them in the group, all of them in the same mixture of torn rags and tatters, and all with horrible mutilations to their faces and arms. Most had shaved their heads, and a couple had managed makeshift piercings through their skin, thin strips of metal that dangled and glinted in the night, swaying from their faces. Batgirl watched as they entered the remnants of St. Vincent's off what had once been Dillon Avenue, waited another 20 seconds, and then slid through the shadows until she was close enough to get a look inside. Light was flickering from within, one source, probably a single fire. Inside, beyond the pews, she saw the group seated together around the fire. One of them was handing out bundles from a small cloth bag. She watched as each of the followers speared their bundle on the end of a long spike, then held it over the fire. The stink of burning fur assaulted her.
Ugh.
Rats. They were eating rats. She held still for almost another minute, watching, then resolved that the group would be staying put for some time. Her back was exposed too, and that made her very uncomfortable. And so she stepped away, scaling the side of a nearby building, testing the wall as she climbed. Up top, she turned and settled in to watch the entrance of the church. They'd be coming out soon, probably when it was darker. She'd follow them if she could, and maybe they'd lead her to Black Mask himself. And maybe, just maybe, she could figure out his agenda.
Doesn't make sense.
In a city where more of the structures had collapsed than were still standing, Black Mask was having his folks burn down those that remained. And it wasn't even that he was going after all of the standing structures. The fact that she had her current perch and that they were inside St. Vincent's right now was proof of that. No, it seemed to be only certain buildings. She had heard from someone in the MASH sector that a whole mob of Black Mask's followers had descended on the old Embassy Orient and driven out all of the squatters. And then they'd burnt the place to the ground, destroying the shelter used by over 60 of Gotham's refugees. From what Batgirl had heard, there'd been over 50 people in Black Mask's mob. Practically an army in the No Man's Land, and terrifying to contemplate even for a moment. 50 of the mutilated monsters, all descending on the Embassy Orient. It was a miracle no one had died.
Nice costume.
Batgirl stiffened, taking her time to turn, telling herself she had known this was coming all along. She forced herself to meet his eyes, but he wasn't ready for the stare down yet. He looked her over slowly, starting with the boots, then tracking up until he reached her fully concealed face.
Glad you approve.
I don't.
Gotham needed a bat. You weren't around.
Where I've been and why, those are reasons of my own.
She thought he sounded almost defensive, and that gave her confidence that she had made the right choice in donning the costume. She took a step closer, and now he was meeting her eyes.
But now you're back, and you're going to need help.
No.
You're wrong.
Then I'll learn that on my own.
I've been doing this for weeks now. It's made a difference.
The work or the symbol?
He never looked away from her. Behind the mask, his eyes were hidden, but she was certain they were locked on her own.
The bat is a powerful image, as you know. Very primal, very potent. It's made things easier. If you tell me to take it off, I will, but I won't stop the work.
He nodded slowly, as if accepting the confession and the terms. Then, with his chin, he gestured to her waist, where the can of spray paint was affixed to her belt.
The tagging, that's been you?
Yes.
It's a good idea. I intend to adopt it.
Thanks.
He looked past her for a moment, to the horizon.
You're right about one thing. This city does need a bat.
Maybe more than one.
His head came back to her quickly, and for a moment she thought she'd pushed it too far, but she'd blown it.
Don't disgrace the symbol.
Then I'm approved?
No, but you're not disapproved.
Fair enough. For now.
He turned, the cape billowing back for a moment as he stepped up to the edge of the roof. He didn't look back.
Keep your watch on Black Mask. I'll be in touch.
And then he stepped off into the air and fell into the darkness. Christina Weir had been a cop for 8 years before the No Man's Land was declared. She loved her job, and she was damn good at it. That was why she'd stayed in Gotham. She was GCPD. It was what she was supposed to do. Even before Gordon and Essen had announced that they were staying behind on Black Monday, even before the other officers, DeFilippis and Montoya and Bullock and the rest, all threw their lot in with the commissioner, she had decided to stay. She'd had absolutely no intention of falling in love as a result of the decision. During the battle against the demons and the lowboys over a week before, she'd waded to the front and kicked some serious ass. She'd even saved a couple of lives. DeFilippis's, when a demon's skull tried to bury a hatchet in the young cop's head, and then Bullock's. The lowboys had started in with the arrows, and she'd pushed Bullock out of the line of fire. She'd almost been too slow then. An arrow had pierced his coat.
Harvey! Jesus!
Bullock pulled back the fabric to show where the arrow had passed through the clothing, but missed his skin. He spread out his baggy overcoat to illustrate the weight he'd lost in the last few months.
I'm only half the man I once was. You keep jumping on me like this, Weir, I'm gonna accuse you of sexual harassment.
Oh, God.
She blushed and scrambled off him, thinking that he knew, because after all, he was a detective. But Bullock's expression hadn't changed, and she had known that she was just being paranoid. There was no way any of them knew. She had been certain. She and DeFilippis had been careful. By then, the fighting had moved on, and she'd had to rush to catch up. They'd taken back Central, then Old Gotham, and then Pettit had gotten out of hand. She didn't want to dwell on that, but it soured the victory. She didn't want to call what Pettit had done murder, but she sure as hell couldn't think of another way to put it. That night, she had wanted to find Andy again, wanted to sneak another few minutes of warmth in his arms. But it hadn't worked out. She'd been on post outside of the Gordon home until past midnight, and he'd been out at Central getting things squared away. Just wasn't possible, and she'd known that, but it had made her moody anyway. And when Donnelly had tried to get her talking about baseball that night on post, she hadn't even responded. She'd gone back to her shelter before 3, the gutted remnants of what had once been a liquor store, eaten a cold dinner of processed beefy pasta straight from the can, removed her boots and body armor, slid into the sleeping bag, and put her head down on the pillow.
Ow! What?
When she'd raised it again, wondering what was making such a hard lump, she'd found her flashlight, flicked it on just long enough to move the pillow and take a look, and beneath the pillow, she'd found a small, miraculously intact music box.
Andy.
She'd gone to sleep, listening to it play. The next morning, she returned to her post outside Gordon's house.
You're late, Chris.
I know.
Officer Donnelly looked at her with some concern.
I had a can of beef and noodles before bed last night and shot the whole thing back out again this morning.
Oh, that's not good. I got some canned tuna if you want. Tastes okay. It's pretty mild.
Oh, not really hungry, Brian.
Right. Commissioner wanted to see you.
Why?
He didn't say. He's in the garden.
She looked over her shoulder at the closed front door of the house.
Now?
Said as soon as you arrived.
Be right back.
Word of advice, Chris. Don't say the name Batman. Andy says it's poison.
Yeah, he told me.
She had nothing but respect for Gordon, thought of him as a gifted police and a strong leader, but, and she knew this already, if he knew about her and DeFilippis and he wanted it to stop, she was going to have to tell him to keep out of it. She'd spent more than a month thinking about it already, and while she understood the department's policy against fraternization, she hardly felt it was an issue. And the fact was, if Gordon went there, she'd call him on it. It was the pot in the kettle as far as she was concerned. He was at the workbench, chipping away at the frozen earth inside a clay pot, but he stopped when he saw her.
Chris, come on in.
She came down the steps and stopped a respectful 10 feet away, keeping her face blank. She'd been a patrol officer before the NML, a sergeant, but she knew the detective tricks well, and she knew how to keep a poker face. Gordon studied her for a moment, almost sternly.
How are you feeling?
Fine, sir.
Good. Good. I heard about what you did, Chris.
She kept her mouth shut.
It was fine work.
Sir?
In the last week alone, I've had 6 people tell me that you retook Central pretty much single-handed. Montoya, Lee, Bullock, all of them have gone out of their way to tell me what a fine job you did. It's mostly because of that I wanted to talk to you. You know that my daughter is still in the city, right?
Yes, sir. She lives in the clock tower.
Yes, she does. And she refuses to leave. I told her I'd be happier if she was in Tri-Corner with the rest of us, and she just wouldn't listen. About as stubborn as her old man, I guess.
Weir nodded, not knowing what to say.
We've got that area pretty much secured. But I'm a father, and I'm nervous. And that's why I wanted to talk to you.
He wiped his dirty hands against his pants, trying to clean them, then looked back at her. His smile was apologetic.
I want you to take 5 officers, draw arms and ammunition from Pettit, and get a flare gun. And I'd like you to organize the protection around the clock tower.
You want me to protect the tower?
Not just the tower, no. But of course, well, that's a large part of it. You've seen the map. The border is holding, but that's the outer edge. It abuts on Penguin's territory, and 2 faces to the east as well. I want a fixed observation post, and I want to make certain my daughter is relatively protected. You're the best person for the job, Chris.
Thank you, sir.
If there's any trouble, send up a flare. Otherwise, I trust you to handle whatever may arise.
Yes, sir. Thank you, sir.
Gordon stuck out his hand.
No, Chris. Thank you.
Black Mask looked at the man hanging over the oil drum. The man's feet had been tied to a length of good rope, the rope slung across the rafters, and the effect was like that of a piñata dangling at a crowded party. The fire from the oil drum was already singeing the man's hair, and his sweat sizzled when it splashed down against the heated metal. Black Mask removed the blindfold and tenderly took the man's face in his hands. He tried to do it the way his mother had before she died, before he'd changed from Roman Sionis into the deformed and reborn man he was now. He tried to do it with love, because he wanted the man to truly understand.
Do you see? Go to hell!
Black Mask shut his eyes for a moment. This was not really an unexpected response, but he had hoped for more understanding, for less drastic measures. He let his hand slip from the man's face, turning to face the congregation spread out before him. They filled the hall, lit by the burning makeshift torches. He saw the faces of his flock, the scars on each and every one of them. All those scars on the outside, showing the world the truth of what was within each and every one of them.
He does not yet see! He believes nothing has changed! He believes that the lie can continue! But we know better, do we not? We know better now! Once, yes. Once I hid behind a mask myself. Once I covered my scars, my true face. I played games, pretending to greatness. I played games, pretending to rule crime. And in one instant, I saw it was all false. In that instant, the mask was destroyed. In that instant, Gotham fell. For the house built on a foundation of sand, it will collapse under its own weight, surely. Thus Gotham collapsed. Its shining facades giving way to the broken soul it concealed. What they called an earthquake, we now know was more a warning.
Black Mask moved around to stand beside the dangling man. From his pocket, he removed the straight razor he had used to reveal his own true face, the very blade that had cut the mask from him once and for all. With it, he had drawn the lines across the face, blackened and burnt so many years before, making cuts that turned the shining and smooth skin into the patchwork of pieces that represented his soul.
All of us must show our true face, or pay the price.
Amen!
He must see!
He must see!
We make the cuts!
Black Mask reached out with the blade. Blood spattered and sizzled into the flames. Black Mask leaned close enough to feel the heat searing at the too sensitive skin on his face.
Do you see?
The man's tears mixed with the blood racing along the split skin of his face. Black Mask smiled.
He sees!
He raised an arm, pointing through the shattered windows at the building in the distance, still standing arrogantly against the broken skyline of the No Man's Land.
We destroy the lies! What has been revealed must remain uncovered! What still stands as a mask must be torn down! Those people who are blind, they must be made to see! Those buildings that still stand, they too must fall! For Gotham to be redeemed, all of his scars must show. Look upon the affront to us. Know it for what it is.
The congregation turned, each set of eyes settling on the building in the distance, the tower with the giant clock.
Do you see?
We see!
And shall you act?
We shall act!
Then prepare yourselves well. For the time is short. We will march soon. We will burn it down. And God help anyone who tries to protect the lies!
Black Mask has taken 3 buildings in the last 2 days. But each time I arrive, he and his followers have already vanished. I don't know where he's hiding. I don't know where he's working from.
How many men does he have?
I don't know that either. I've heard reports of 60, probably more. It's a cult of some sort. That's about all I've figured out so far. It's pretty bad.
Meaning?
Meaning that everywhere he's struck, he's left people either dead or mutilated. Cuts, mostly. But some branding. Uniformly to the face.
Batman nodded, then reached for the canisters resting on the workbench and offered one to her.
Tear gas. Very potent. Special mixture. Use it sparingly.
I will. Thanks.
What can you tell me about the buildings?
They've all been tall, over 6 stories.
Built by Wayne Enterprises.
Wayne buildings are the only big ones still standing in Gotham. He was the only builder smart enough to quake-proof his structures. Of course, at the time, everyone thought it was just another example of his remarkable stupidity.
Then he was lucky.
Batman spread a map of the city on the now cleared work table.
Show me where the buildings were.
She drew a line with her gloved finger down along the east side toward the south and old Gotham.
Consistently been moving south.
He's going for the clock tower.
You think?
I know. It represents Gotham. It was built by Wayne Enterprises. Roman Sionis hates Wayne. If the clock tower isn't his next target, it's certainly on the short list.
He looked up from the map. She felt the glare from behind his hidden eyes and found herself wondering what she might have done wrong.
You're going to stop him. He will not take the clock tower. Is that understood?
I'll try, but...
Don't try. Keep it from happening. And stay out of sight.
I can do one or the other, but not both.
Then you're not worthy of the mantle.
He moved to the stairs that would lead out of the basement and back into the night.
Prove me wrong.
Batgirl watched him leave. After a time, she realized her fists were clenched, and she forced her fingers open, felt the circulation returning to her hands.
Damn him!
And then, she began gathering the equipment she'd need for the job. For the first couple of days, the posting went fine. Ware set up a rotating schedule outside of the clock tower, 3 shifts of 2 cops each, herself included. Gordon let her take Donnelly as her second in command, and he ran the day shift while Weir took the second shift. Way she figured it, they'd stick to the schedule as it was for a week, then swap around so she could get some daylight time in too. That way it would be fair, and that way none of the cops would become complacent. Pettit had granted them all 5 shells for their shotguns, and Weir had drawn a flare gun too, as requested. It was the emergency beacon, only to be fired off if things really started to go sour. She settled into position, watching the sunset. Turner was on post with her, another rookie like Donnelly, but one who had yet to distinguish himself in her eyes. Andy had referred to him a couple of times as the Minnow, and looking at him now, Chris had to suppress a grin. Turner was thin and tall and tow-headed, and he looked like a worried fish the way his eyes wandered up and down the street. Her stomach was still bothering her, had been throughout the week. For a while, she'd thought it was the water, that maybe it wasn't as purified as the Blue Boys had hoped, but no one else seemed to be reacting to it. For now, she was grinning and bearing it. Worst came to worst, she'd try to make her way up the east side to the MASH sector, maybe see the doctor there. If in fact there was a doctor there, the MASH sector was really nothing more than a rumor as far as she knew, but it seemed plausible that one doctor in all of Gotham City would have been just crazy enough to remain. The dark finally crept its way in, and the night turned colder. Not as bad as it had been even a week before, and Weir wondered if spring was finally en route. That would be nice. A little warmth, something to melt the snow away. Weir heard it before Turner. Through the rubble, it was impossible to determine which direction it was coming from.
What is that?
Shut up.
She brought the shotgun up to her shoulder, chambering the first round, using the barrel to guide her search as she swept the length of the street. Doors were closed. No one was out.
What the hell is that?
He too had brought his weapon to his shoulder.
I don't know.
Fire the flare!
No, not yet. Not until we know what it is.
Whatever it is, it's not good. Come on, Chris, fire the flare! We need reinforcements!
Not yet.
She wasn't going to cry wolf. She wasn't going to ask for help until she was damn certain help was needed. All of a sudden, silence ran down the length of the street, the no man's land quiet that Ware heard in the night. The city without noise, no voices, no engines, at times seemed without life itself, absolute. That scared her, more than the noise did. Then, as if by magic, they appeared at the ends of the street, and she thought perhaps her eyes were playing tricks on her. The darkness, perhaps, that was what made them look so awful, so completely pitiless and horrifying. Even at the distance, the faces seemed grotesque, marred, and evil. One of the figures stepped forward, and she saw he was holding a pistol, a big one, maybe a .357.
Surrender! Or die!
From her angle, Batgirl saw Black Mask leading the larger of the two groups to the north end of the block. 33 of his followers, all of them armed with the weaponry of the NML, bats and clubs and axes and knives. They had only one firearm among them, she was certain, and that was the pistol in Black Mask's hand. It made sense. With the gun, he was in control. Anyone else with a gun, they were a threat. She checked the harness, making certain the straps were tight, fitted properly. She hoped to God she could cut the head off the beast. There was only one way to do this now, and whether Batman approved of it or not, she would go through with it. It burned her, though, that he had left her to this without explanation. After all, if protecting the clock tower was important, why wasn't he there too? She didn't even understand the reason behind it. As far as she knew, the clock tower was just another building that had somehow managed to keep from falling in the quake. She'd ask Batman about it later, after it was over, if she still could. She watched the cops at the foot of the tower reacting as they realized that Black Mask had flanked both ends of the block. The taller of the two, the male, had thrown down his shotgun and run.
Charming.
The remaining cop had put her back to the front of the building. From the north end of the street, the sound of Black Mask's voice rose to her ears.
We have come to reveal Gotham's true face!
He pointed at the tower, almost at where Batgirl was crouched, just above the clock face.
This affront to the no man's land! We will destroy it, and all within shall see, shall remove their masks, or else they shall suffer for it!
Just below her, inside the tower, she heard the sound of a window opening and watched as the barrel of a rifle slipped out, glinting in the night.
What?
Her surprise was only momentary. Clearly, people were living in the tower. But someone at the top was about to play sniper was totally unexpected.
Damn it.
Batman would never forgive her if she let Black Mask die. Without another thought, Batgirl pushed off the roof. Curling her knees against her chest, she dropped through the air like a cinder block into a pond.
Turner, wait! Here, you bastard!
But Turner was already gone, into the ruins on either side. At both ends of the street, the mobs began to advance. Weir dropped the shotgun and went for the flare. And as she did, she heard the report. And she felt her leg snap back and total numbness run from her hip to her foot. She knew she was on her side, felt the cold stairs in front of the clock tower digging into her body. She knew she had taken a round. And she knew she had the flare gun in her hand. She fired, watching the white streak race into the sky. On the street, the converging groups froze, tracking the ascending light. The flare reached its apex and went out, and for a half second, there was only more darkness. Then the flare detonated, and everything was suddenly bathed in shattering white light, the shadows falling suddenly sharp and long around the block. And Ware opened her mouth, as the shape, lit by the flare from above, resolved.
Oh my God!
And she saw the giant wings of a descending bat. Its shadow slid over her, across to the mob. Weir fumbled for her shotgun, took her eyes off the sky long enough to find the weapon, grabbed the gun, rolling and looking for the shot, and again froze at what she saw. Smoke had enveloped the space where the mobs were converging, and people were falling back, coughing and crying and running, men and women alike, all with the same horribly mutilated faces. Standing in the middle, clouds spiraling past him, stood Black Mask, his gun up, firing at the giant bat descending on him. The wings alone stretched 16 feet at least, and as she watched, Weir saw the wings collapse and a figure drop from between them, Kate billowing back and up, landing perhaps 20 feet from the mob.
You can back down or you can fall down, but if you fall down, you won't be getting up again!
No more masks!
Batgirl leapt, impossibly high and impossibly far it seemed to Weir, and she had come down again now with a kick. And Black Mask was on the ground. The Batgirl whirled, catching another of the mob along the head with the cape's edge. And Weir thought it had to have been weighted the way the man went down unconscious. Then the Batgirl was on Black Mask, yanking him up for the crowd to see, but the crowd had already begun to retreat. Black Mask tried to strike her, and the blow was blocked almost casually. And then the Batgirl was hitting him. And Black Mask was going down once more. Before he hit the ground, however, she caught him, throwing him over her shoulder, and then diving forward into the smoke. Weir held her breath, tracking the shotgun along the length of the street, blinking back the tears that were now filling her eyes. It seemed to her to have ended as quickly as it had begun. The smoke was already dissipating, revealing writhing bodies on the ground. The last of the mobile members of Black Mask's mob disappeared into the darkness. Weir looked up to see not more of Black Mask's mob, but Gordon and Montoya and Bullock racing down the street toward her. More cops were following, and she saw DeFilippis and he caught her eyes, but she kept herself from calling his name.
Weir, are you all right?
Sir, I'm wounded, but all right.
He nodded at her.
Bullock, secure the area. Montoya, follow me.
Gordon continued through the open doorway, and she understood the look on his face. She understood it because it seemed to her DeFilippis had the same one when he fell to his knees at her side.
Oh my God. Who the hell did this to you?
Black Mask. He's gone. He's gone.
She looked at him, at the way he was staring at her, then glanced past his shoulder at the other cops now moving along the street. She looked back to him, wanting to say something more, but hesitating.
Oh, the hell with it.
And then he kissed her. Harvey Bullock gaped at the sight.
Well, I'll be damned.
Oracle, personal. Entry number 342. NML, day 124. 1442 Zulu. Dear Dad, you didn't have to break the door down, you know? I understand that you were worried, but you really didn't have to break the door down. It's easier, incidentally, to be angrier at you about that than at him about her. The noise had gotten my attention. That's what did it. That sound of them marching and banging their metal. I don't know what the hell it was. But I looked out the window and there were over 50 of them, Dad, at both ends of the street. And I knew it was Black Mask leading them. I knew it even before I used my binoculars to confirm it. Two cops, and one of them turned rabbit, leaving the other, Sergeant Weir, to block the door. I mean, what was she supposed to do? Threaten to arrest them? I've kept the rifle for years, Dad. Always the weapon of last resort. I've never even fired the damn thing. Bought it, in case it ever became the one situation, the one justification, where a life had to be taken to preserve another. It felt like poison in my hands. It didn't sit right on my shoulder, and I could barely see through the scope at first. But I had to kill him. That's what I told myself. They were following Black Mask, and if I took him from them, that was the only way I thought I could protect Weir and the others still living in my building. And myself. Because let's face it, while your little girl is no slouch in the hand-to-hand department, even in this here chair, there ain't no way I'm gonna win in a fight against 50. Have you ever looked through the scope on a rifle and seen a man oblivious to you and known you could kill him with just 1 pound of pull from your right index finger? You never talk about the war. Maybe you know it too well. I didn't like that feeling, Dad. It made me want to vomit. But I'd taken the safety off. And I'd let my breath out. And I'd lined up the shot as best I could. And then she flew by. What? You can't know what it felt like. I don't think anyone can know what that moment felt like. Watching her swooping down, wearing those wings, the glider wings. The glider wings I helped design, for God's sake. That made her look so big and terrifying and powerful. Watching her drop the canister of tear gas, the handful of smoke pellets. The way she cut loose from the wings and dropped onto the scene like she'd been doing it forever. Like she was made for it, like... like she was me. In that moment, I hated her. I was so angry. I couldn't even breathe. I just moved the scope onto her head. And I thought about it. Forgive me, but I honestly thought about it for an instant. I honestly thought about punishing her for making me feel the way I did then. But I didn't.
Barbara, what happened here?
Black Mask. He ran away before you got here. You didn't believe me for an instant. Maybe you thought it had been the Batman, that he had appeared and saved me in the nick of time. Maybe that's why you look so angry. There was no time or way to explain it, though. It's unfortunate because you were worried enough you wanted to stay to make certain I was feeling all right. And I felt like I had to practically shove you out the door before I could do what I needed to do. But I saw the look on your face, Dad. After you left, I went back into the control room and got on the radio. I tried for 2 hours to raise him on his frequency, demanding that he talk to me and getting no answer whatsoever. Finally, I broke out one of my solar NICADs and plugged it into the infrared projector I'd been using for sensor tests. I cut out a stencil the shape of a bat, and I went to the window and I turned it all on, shining my invisible bat signal at the sky. Faint, nearly useless, invisible to the whole city. But if the Batman looked up for a moment with those IR lenses of his switched on, maybe, just maybe, he'd see me. I sat there all night. I sat there until dawn, waiting for him to show up. I'd finished cursing him with every name in the book when I heard him behind me.
Barbara?
He didn't even move, standing half in the shadows at the other end of the room like some cross between a gargoyle and a nightmare.
Did you think I wouldn't find out? Did you think I honestly wouldn't care that someone else is out there being me? Did you even think about it at all? How dare you? How dare you do this to me?
He still didn't move. It was like he had turned to marble, absolutely untouchable, emotionless.
You know it wasn't as simple as that.
No! No, I do not know that! What I know is that there's now someone else out there, someone who isn't me. And she's got what I made! She's got what I was!
I took the projector and shoved it to the floor. And the crashing noise was almost satisfying. And for a moment, I wanted to kick it and get that noise again. And then I remembered that I couldn't do that. Wouldn't ever be able to do that again. Never. He moved out of the shadow, coming forward.
My options have been limited, Barbara. It was like this one. When I returned.
Returned? So you did leave after all. You did turn your back on us.
I never turned my back. I needed to prepare. I needed to think.
3 months, Batman. 3 months. While you were thinking, we were here fighting.
I know.
You didn't give her the job? You're saying she took it on all by herself?
Yes.
So, it was her doing the tagging?
At first, yes.
Who is she? Just tell me that.
I can't.
I rolled in close and glared up at him.
I can find out. You know I can. You're not the only detective in the No Man's Land.
Yes, you can find out.
He put a hand out on my shoulder. And then he crouched so we were at eye level. And when he did that, I felt the anger just slip away. And then all I felt was sad.
But what would it prove?
Nothing. I turned my head away, looking at the window. The window where I'd held the rifle. The window where the other Batgirl had dropped past me like she knew all of my tricks already. And maybe knew them better than I ever had. I felt his hand move from my shoulder to my chin, and he turned my face back to look at him. And then I really did want to cry. He'd only ever touched my face one time before, when I was in the hospital after Joker shot me. I remembered waking up then, in the darkness, and being so scared and hurting so much, hearing the machines hissing and the EKG buzzing. He had touched my cheek then. The feel of his hand inside that glove, so gentle, made me think of you, Dad.
No pain I've ever caused you was my choice. I've never wanted you hurt. I know that makes no difference.
He moved his hand away.
I need you to trust me.
I've always trusted you. And you know I always will.